He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is Katz at Night. John Katzimatidis here, and we got a great show for you today. And I'll tell you, today was a call to arms. I was at the funeral this morning, and we're going to be talking about it this morning, tonight, and brought tears to everybody's eyes. But this is a call to arms, and we got to make changes in New York City, New York State, because we're not going to take it anymore. In the studio with us for this TriCast, 970 AM The Answer, WABC 770, and WLIR in Long Island, we have Judge Richard Weinberg. Judge, welcome.
Thank you.
And Governor David Patterson.
Good to be here, John.
We have two common sense Democrats. We need at least one Republican. How about a common sense Republican on the phone with us? Is Congressman Peter King a common sense Republican? How are you, Congressman?
John, I'm doing fine. It's great to be with you. It's a tough day, but it's great to be with good friends there.
Like now, this
you
morning,
and Judge and David.
Yes, this morning I was at the funeral from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock, and when some of the people spoke, I had tears in my eyes. And I understand you were at the funeral or the wake on Thursday, and it was very emotional. And why don't you start to talk about what happened Thursday?
Yeah, I was at the wake on Thursday. Actually, County Executive Bruce Blakeman was with me, and we spoke with Jason Rivera's widow, Dominique. And I tell you, I was struck so much by her and also by his older brother, Jeff. I mean, they were so emotionally devastated, but no complaining, no feeling sorry for themselves. They just kept saying that they didn't want Jason to have died in vain. They said that action has to be taken, and that's really what they were looking for. They weren't feeling sorry for themselves. It was really an interesting dichotomy in that they were grief-stricken, but they wanted everything focused on getting a job done, stopping crime, and being tough with law and order.
I need a breaking news item from you, and I don't know if you were there at the time. I understand when DA Alvin Bragg walked in, they specifically left the church, went to the back. Did you experience that?
No, you can't. If you're talking about yesterday, I got there about 10 to 2 or 2 o'clock, I think. That the mayor and others were there between 1 and 1:30. When I arrived, it was like 1:45. So I was not aware of that. I did hear that they left the church. I didn't know what that was about. In fact, when I was being escorted up the center aisle by an NYPD lieutenant, she said to me, "Do you mind waiting a few moments because the family has left the church?" I thought they had left the cathedral because somebody wasn't feeling well or they just had to get themselves composed. But if that's the reason that they left because of Alvin Bragg, I'm not surprised to hear that, but I can't vouch for it. But I can vouch for the fact that they did leave the cathedral several minutes before I had arrived, and the cops didn't tell me why. They just said that they left the cathedral to go behind the altar.
Congressman, this is Lydia Serrani, and
Hi,
that's what a lot of reports are saying, is that when they heard that Alvin Bragg had walked in, that's when they decided to leave, and then they informed the people that he was with that they would not return back into the cathedral. They would stay in that back room until he left. And now we know that that report was likely true, considering the fact what the widow, Dominique, said at church today.
We
have a clip of it, and this is a watershed moment for the city. Play it.
You have the whole nation on gridlock, and although you won't be here anymore, I want you to live through me. The system continues to fail us. We are not safe anymore. Not even the members of the service. I know you were tired of these laws, especially the ones from the new DA. I hope he's watching you speak through me right now.
Wow. I tell you,
goosebumps.
People that gave her a standing ovation, and And it was, I hope, I know the governor was sitting there, the mayor was sitting there, and the governor did not speak, by the way, this morning. And it's, she should get, Peter, what do we call it, a call to arms or a call of the call of what's going on?
John, I think it should be a call to arms, a battle cry.
A battle cry.
And I think we have to keep this up day after day after day to keep the pressure on progressive politicians. I don't want to make this political, but they are the ones right now who are refusing to move on bail reform. They are the ones who spent the last year and a half really mercilessly, relentlessly criticizing the police, creating a mood with the situations like this could occur. So I think we should keep it up and demand law and order. And listen, I'm a Republican. I'm saying Mayor Adams, everything he's saying right now is the right thing. So long as he is saying the right thing and trying to do the right thing, forgetting our party, we have the obligation to stand with him. And I really give him full credit because he is right now standing up to his own party. That's tough to do.
I'm standing behind him. Governor, are you standing behind Eric Adams?
Oh, absolutely.
I am.
Peter, I have a question for you.
Sure.
As much as the progressives are blocking the bail reform, on these issues involving law and order, I don't hear any of them saying anything right now. And I think that some of the elected officials whose charge is to deal with these recent issues with the DA Bragg and that type of thing, there is a whole lot more latitude than they're taking. I mean, in other words, everything is political. This is a tragic day. Our main focus should be on the family of the officer slain. The other officer will be buried next week, and just the horror of that situation. But just politically speaking, I don't understand why people aren't coming down harder, because now Adams keeps doing it and no one has resisted him. I don't see why a few others don't follow suit.
And Mayor Adams just put out a statement a short time ago.
Tell us the statement.
Okay, so he just put this out regarding that 16-year-old teenager in the Bronx that shot a cop, and he's now been released on a $250,000 bond, which means he only had to post $25,000. Adams wrote, "New Yorkers should all be outraged that a repeat offender accused of shooting at a police officer is today walking free on bond because judges are precluded from even considering danger to the community like every other state." And he goes on to say, "It is further proof that our current system is failing us today of all days with the city in mourning." And so this teenager, he was busted not too long ago, charged as a juvenile for also illegal gun possession. He's an up-and-coming rapper. And this is just a travesty that this is still occurring in our city. Now we have two cops dead.
See, you know, he's giving that, what that rapper is doing is giving himself name recognition.
Right.
And he's going to make money by crossing the line and shooting at a cop or becoming like that. That way he gets name recognition and said, "Oh, yeah, that's the guy that shot the cop. Or that's the guy that got in trouble."
Well, right. He's also an up-and-coming predicate felon, and he can have name recognition, but he'll have to recognize it inside jail.
I understand we also have on the line with us Paul DiGiacomo, the head of the Detectives Union. Are you there, Mr. DiGiacomo?
Yes, Sean. How are you?
Good. Were you in church with us this morning?
Yes, I was.
I tell you, it was a very moving experience.
Yes, it was. Probably the most moving experience in 39 years I have.
A 22-year-old losing his life, and it wasn't right.
It was a very touching ceremony, and I just feel so sad for that poor family.
Detective DiGiacomo, what kind of message do you think it sends that a guy who shoots him, is let free?
Well, I think it's disgraceful. And I think we've been saying this for 2 years now to our elected officials that they're sending the wrong message. And they're sending a message to be confrontational with the police, to disrespect the police. And this is the final result of what happened. And we've been saying it for quite some time now.
Judge Weinberg, what would you have done had this defendant appeared?
Let's go to the judge.
Yes.
I hate to second guess another judge, but if that case were before me, I would not have said 250 over 250 because they only have to front $24,000, 10%. I would have remanded him without bail, held him in after the indictment until the trial. I would have not said money bail on this, because he had access to too much cash because he was making too much money as a rapper. So he remanded him.
Right. This is Judge Dennis Boyle. He's known for being extremely lenient, especially people with illegal gun possession. He's a repeat offender, Congressman King, what is your reaction to hearing about this?
To me, this is just the latest in a series of terrible decisions and terrible actions. And to come this week, I mean, the same week as two police officers have been murdered, it sets such a bad signal. And it's wrong. It's morally wrong. I was never a judge, but I was a practicing attorney. To me, he should have been remanded. There should have been no bail. I agree with Judge Weinberg. Let me also say, Paul DiGiacomo is doing a tremendous job. And I think he would agree that the new police commissioner, Keyshawn Sewell, is also doing a great job.
Yes, absolutely. She's very sincere and heartfelt in her position.
Tell our audience about that speech the new commissioner gave this morning. I mean, she got three standing ovations.
Yes, that's the first time I ever saw that, and it was very sincere and a genuine and came from the heart.
Right. We're hearing now from this what all the family's saying about Officer Rivera, that he knew two things in life that he was sure of at only 22 years old. One was that he wanted to be a cop, and two, that he wanted to marry his childhood sweetheart, that Dominique, and that he felt like it was a calling from God that he would put on that uniform, and that his brother said he wasn't afraid to put on the uniform. He wasn't afraid to die for what he believed him. I mean, this is just incredible. This is an incredible young man. What a loss.
Well, he's a true
hero. He's everything that you wanted in a cop. I mean, he was everything, and especially coming from the Dominican community, the fact that he wanted to build bridges between his community and the cops, and to have him shot down like that is just absolutely disgraceful. It's so sad. It's so tragic.
What we're looking at, unfortunately, is this wave of social disintegration. People have no respect for one another. They have no respect for authority. They do not care what kind of violence they engage in. They run rampant in the streets, on the subways. We have to send a loud and clear message to the leaders in Albany and the city council that they have to change the laws and they have to change their attitudes. They need an attitude adjustment. They should be defending and protecting law enforcement and the public and not giving in to this wave of violence.
Governor Patterson, I want to ask you, why do you think Governor Hochul didn't speak?
Well, in those situations, and there were a few, when I was governor, I did speak. I don't know if they didn't want her to speak, you know, based on this situation that's going on with Bragg, or if she may have just said she just wants to come and observe, because in the next few weeks, she's got to make a decision. Now, what could make her decision easier is if you're going to remove someone from office, just like removing someone for any wrongdoing, you're actually going to have to demonstrate that that's what the office is doing. If they wrote a memo that they never acted on, he could have really addressed this a whole lot better than he has. But I just think that she probably felt uncomfortable in that environment.
Congressman King, remember what's happened in Nassau County. Remind everybody what happened to Todd Kominsky and what happened to poor Laura Curran, who's a decent lady, when the Democratic Party asked her the last 7 days of the election to support Todd Kominsky. And you know what I'm going to compare this to? I want Governor Hochul to realize that if she doesn't support law and order, the same could happen to the governor's office. Remind everybody, Governor. I mean, Congressman.
Sure. Guy, you're trying to promote me as good as David Patterson. this can happen in both parties. You fall into your own silo, and all you hear is groupthink, what everyone else is saying within that party. And right now, someone like Todd Kominsky, for instance, he was a big supporter of the so-called bail reform. He was out front on it. He saw that as his ticket to become district attorney and then ultimately attorney general or governor. I don't think he ever even contemplated not being for this terrible bail reform law. And he ran. He thought he was going to sail right into the DA's office. And quite frankly, that is what brought the crime issue into the Nassau County politics. Ann Donnelly went after him on bail reform. People in Nassau County saw what was happening in New York City. And even though there's more Democrats and Republicans in Nassau County, Todd Kominsky was defeated by 18 points. Ann Donnelly beat him, I think it was 59-41. And she was a newcomer, never been in politics before, but she ran on that basic issue. And that should send a signal to everyone.
Well,
that's
besides the last 7 days of the election, before the election, the Democratic Party asked the county executive, Laura Curran, who was going to win, and to support Todd Kominsky. Mm-hmm. And what happened?
And she lost by 1 point. He lost by 18 points. Now, I'm from Nassau County, just like you, Peter. We call that a major beatdown. But with Curran, I had a conversation with her over lunch during the summer. It was a Friday afternoon because I came here to be with all of you afterwards. And we talked about this kind of thing. And I told her, I think there's room for you to pull away from that crowd, because in Nassau County, it could go either way. And unfortunately for her, it did.
It was unfortunate. I strongly supported Bruce Blakeman, but I consider Laura Curran a good friend, and she was pro-cop. She was not part of the Kominsky crowd, but she got, again, sort of pressured into endorsing him, endorsing his candidacy, and she got pulled down because of that, which in a way is unfair, but that's the realities of politics. And I think a lot of Democrats next year running should realize that there could well be a red wave, yeah, if you want to call that, based on the crime issue.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the wave and people in New York City, New York State, and the head of the union, Paul DiGiacomo of the Detectives Union. Can we start a wave like we did in Nassau County that our politicians, you're either pro-criminal or pro-blue, pro-our policemen in blue, mm-hmm, or pro-criminal? Take your choice. You can't be both.
Well, John, if I may, you know, many of our politicians have their heads in the sand for a long time. And now their heads are out of the sand and they're exposed because of this terrible tragedy. This could be fixed fairly simply. And it's the bail reform law has to be reversed and fixed to give judges the discretion to keep dangerous felons in jail. Fix the discovery law to protect the complainants and the witnesses, and raise the age and a mandatory minimum if you're caught with an illegal gun. Period, the end. That'll cut down the amount of violence in the city dramatically.
And treating, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds who have guns and sending them to family court because the new age of criminal liability is 18 was a big mistake. That age should go back down to 16 years of age. Keep them in criminal court. Keep them in Supreme Court. They should not be in family court when they're carrying guns.
This cop that got shot in the leg by the teen rapper, he could have been killed. And he should have never been shot to begin with, because that same perp, he got arrested, but he was charged as a juvenile because of this
in the
first case, which is still ongoing. I mean, that case hasn't even been settled yet, and he was carrying another illegal gun, and then he goes and shoots a cop, and he's let free. I mean, we're in bizarre world.
Well, but I've been talking about this for 3 days. Before we have to take a break in about a minute or so. But I want to say to the head of the Detectives Union, Paul DiGiacomo, too, and the governor and the congressman and everybody and the judge, at what point do you throw the key away when you have three serious criminal charges, 4, 5, 6, 18? At what point?
The problem.
You just keep throwing them back on the streets,
John,
again. Enough is enough.
You're absolutely right, John. The problem is you have the leadership of the state assembly and the leadership of the state senate absolutely and adamantly refuse to make any changes. They've already told Mayor Adams they're not going to go anywhere near changes to those bills up in Albany.
And we have the governor supporting them, which is it's a travesty.
Well,
they're not adult enough to say they made a mistake and fix what they broke. And, you know, we have a detective in a hospital now, also Detective Dominic Libretti, who was shot in the leg executing a search warrant in Staten Island. But not only was he shot in the leg, he was shot in the upper torso. And because he was wearing a heavy-duty vest, because he was doing a search warrant, he was saved. A .45 caliber round entered that vest in his upper torso. We would have had another cop killed as well.
Well, we hope he's recovering. He is, right?
Yeah, he's recovering in a hospital, right, but, you know, he's been through numerous surgeries, and we could have had another dead officer on our hands if he didn't have that vest on.
Well, guys, we got to take a break. I'm getting yelled at like Biden. So we still don't know who's yelling at Biden. I'm getting yelled at even though I own the place. that we have to take a break. But Congressman King, thank you so much. And the head of the Detectives Union, Paul DiGiacomo, thank you for coming on. And thank you for everything you do. And we'll catch up with you soon. And we're going to take a break. And we're supposed to come back with Larry Kudlow to find out where the heck is the economy.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Katzimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Thank God it's Friday, and being Friday, and we're here. And who's here with us every Friday? We have Larry Kudlow to tell us where the heck is the economy going. Larry, it's always good to hear from you on a Friday.
Well, John, it's good to be here. I'm in Washington today. I spoke to the Republican Governors Association, and we had a good talk. I just, though, before I get into that, I just want to say, you know, the big tragic story is Jason Rivera, his funeral with thousands of cops, New York's finest. I was able to listen to one of the eulogies from the new police commissioner who promoted young Rivera to detective first grade for his courage and his sacrifice. And John, you know, it's a dad's tragic, sad, terrible story. And we've just got to do something here in New York City about the crime wave. And the governor's not doing it. And certainly the Manhattan district attorney is not doing it. The city council is not doing it. The legislature is not doing it. We do have a new mayor who I think is moving in the right direction, and he does want to make some important inroads with more cops and more money. But he wants, you know, this no bail policy should go away. That's what he wants. He's right, but that's not what the governor wants, and that's not what the city council wants. I mean, at some point, John, elected leaders have to be held accountable, because not only are we losing New York's finest, the cops, we're losing parents, kids, schools, families, and businesses.
Well, the governor's on notice that we all want her to do something.
Yeah.
The governor was supposed to meet with Bragg today. Larry Kudlow, what do you think? Do you think there was any kind of headway made there?
I will find out, Lydia, but I've been in Washington at the RGA, and I did my TV show from down here, but I will find out.
Tell us what the governors are concerned about.
Well, look, the issue for the governors, and what I talked about, is federalism, the 10th Amendment, that these governors are cutting taxes. They are developing school vouchers and school choice. They are closing borders to stop the over 2 million now illegal immigrants. They are refunding. They are putting money into the police, and they are taking critical race theory out of the schoolrooms, and they're putting parents into power. And the reason it's important, federalism, the 10th Amendment, which, you know, the states used to be called the laboratories of democracy. And when you have Washington, the federal government, going off in this crazy far left binge, you need some good common sense coming from the states. And that's what they're given. And I talked about it. And the chairman of the RGA, Doug Ducey, talked about it. I had on my panel governors from South Carolina and Tennessee and Alaska and Oklahoma. And that's what we all, you know, the cavalry's on the way. Save America, kill the bill. But the governors can take matters into their own hands and promote safe, good schools, pro-growth tax cuts, and try to protect the borders. And that's what we talked about today for, I guess, we went about 90 minutes.
And tell us about the markets. I mean, it seems like a real roller coaster week. I mean, up 1,000, down, back from 1,000, down 600, today up 500. Right. I don't know how we ended the week.
Yeah, no, you're right about the roller coaster. And, you know, stocks are up nicely today, but we've had crazy trading. Look, I think John, I think, well, two things. I would say to anybody listening who's an investor, do not try to outguess or out-time the market. Okay, my philosophy down through the years has always been stocks for the long run. You should buy index funds, buy the S&P, buy several index funds. Do not try to day trade the market. You can't out-time the market. And all the fancy hedge funds who say they can, what the records show, they don't. That the long-run investor is always the biggest winner. So that's point number one. Point number two, I think the volatility has a lot to do right now, John, with the Fed taking the punch bowl away. They're going to be draining money and raising rates. No one knows precisely what, how much, when, where, and why. Neither does the Fed, but that's a big issue. And the second issue is, what's the outcome of this Russian, Putin, Ukraine, Biden story, which is made more complicated by the Chinese Olympics, Winter Olympics next week, where Putin and Xi are apparently getting together. Some great mischief could come from this. And as you know, oil and gas prices have already jumped quite a bit on concerns about this Putin-Ukraine-Russian standoff.
Well, you're going to have in the first quarter of 2022 where we're in, Larry, and you know I always tell you the truth, when you had the fourth quarter, you had $75 oil, and food prices went up 10% or maybe more, 20% sometimes. Gas prices went up significantly. Guess what? Oil is now $90 a barrel. So you know what's going to happen in February and March? Fasten your seatbelt.
Mm. Well, I tend to agree. I think people who are telling investors that the inflation rate is going to come down this year, I guess they're smoking legalized pot, because I don't see any chance of that. The Federal Reserve is going to take the punch bowl away, but they haven't so far. And when they start, it'll take a year or two to have an impact. We have stopped the excessive federal spending. We've saved America and we've killed the bill. So that's the best part. But now the Fed's got to clean up.
Larry, and, Jay Powell is seems like it has a lot of influence from the White House. And Yellen, Janet Yellen is yelling Janet Yellen is yelling that it's going to be 2% by the end of the year. And you have an election year. Does that mean that the March increase is going to be less than people expect because it is an election year? And maybe any other increases don't come till after the election. Is that possible?
Nope. John, they don't control that.
No.
And Janet Yellen, all she's doing is wrecking her reputation. Sad to see.
Well, I believe you. I mean, we're all entitled to our opinions.
I mean, nobody, they don't control the numbers, and they don't control the inflation rate, and they've been wrong about inflation. But it's not going to be 2% this year. Look, the issue right now for the markets is how quickly the Fed is going to take that punch bowl away. And the longer they wait, they're already behind the eight ball. Look, you yourself, you're saying $100 oil or more than that. It's going to spread to food prices. Well, I would agree. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't even started yet. The stock market tries to look ahead. So it's trying to figure out what the Fed's going to do.
But
no one knows for certain.
I'll give you an old expression. I'm not allowed to use the other word. We're urinating against the wind. Remember that old expression?
I'll give you another old expression. Stocks for the long run.
I agree. But the word inflation is coming from not buying our crude oil from Canada and Alaska because we have 100 years worth of crude oil, and we're buying it from Putin, and Putin is laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, well, they shut down Alaska. I had Governor Dunleavy on from Alaska on the show. I mean, they shut down ANWR, and they shut down Willow, and they shut down the Naval Reserve. And by doing so, they've disempowered America and empowered Putin. They've made Putin the energy king of the world.
And we made the American people poorer.
Yes, and they've impoverished America by these stupid policies.
Stupid.
Look, right. No one. I'm not a climate denier. Okay, but you have to be sensible. There is no urgent climate crisis. This is all a fabrication. If you read the studies from the Energy Department or the UN, if you read them carefully, they're not predicting catastrophe. It's the far left radical agenda that talks about catastrophe and, you know, we're in an existential state. That's just not true. The worst case scenario from the UN, the worst case scenario, if no one does anything, and we will do stuff, but if no one does anything, you'd lose 2% of GDP over the next 100 years. You won't even see it.
You're absolutely correct. You're correct.
Things will happen. Innovation will happen. Innovation, technology will happen. We will shift more when it's economically appropriate towards renewable fuels. Mm. Hopefully, nuclear power will be developed, which is the best renewable fuel of all. You've got carbon sequestration coming on stream that will make all these fossil fuels cleaner. And we already have the cleanest emissions record of any of the big economies. So for what reason did we shut down America and empower Putin? And now look at it. We got a standoff. The guy may take over Ukraine or foster a coup d'etat or get together with his friend in China named Xi, who is no friend of the United States. Trust me on that.
We agree 100%. Larry Kudlow, thank you for coming on. I got to remind everybody, Larry Kudlow, every Saturday morning, the number one show on Saturday mornings between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock on WABCRadio.com. And it's now syndicated around the country, which is great news. And right after Larry Kudlow, at 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock, we got Steve Moore, a friend of both of us. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
John Katzenmatidis.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night show. And John, you said we're going to talk about China. We're going to talk about the Olympics. We're going to talk about COVID. And who better to talk to about all of this than with Dr. Yang Jinyan Li. Did I say your name correctly, doctor? Is he on?
Oh, I guess you mispronounced his name.
He's on. Hello, sir. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, hi. So, John, go ahead.
No, we wanted to have you back on. I remember when you were in the studio with us and you spoke about China. And I understand you have your opinion about the Olympics and you wanted to express them.
Oh, yes, of course. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. China will put a big show for the Olympics. China is the one who is politicizing it, but at the same time, the China's leader and also the president of IOC have been accusing others of politicizing the games. So actually, no games actually can be divorced from politics if it is to be hosted by a dictator. So this is the fact we have to recognize.
And for people to realize, Dr. Yang, he's a Tiananmen Square activist back in 1989. He came to the United States. He earned two PhDs, Harvard University, PhD in mathematics. I cannot believe you were there at Tiananmen Square. And here we are again talking about China, the superpower that seems to want to take over the world.
Now tell us what's going on behind the scenes. I was told that if China doesn't do well in the Olympics, they're not going to look... It's not going to look good for the president.
Yes, it doesn't look good for the president if the Olympics do not go well. Reason being, this year, the year 2022, is bound to be turbulent for President Xi Jinping of China because he is busy preparing to enter unprecedented third term. Actually, he tried to be a leader permanently. And by doing so, actually, he has to break the norm that is in practice for many decades, even by the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party itself. So he will think that somebody will resist, he will meet some kind of difficulty. So he wants everything look good in this year. Economics, Olympics, of course, politically and diplomatically. He wants everything to be looking good for him to become a king forever.
Well, what else would you like to tell the American people? We got a minute left.
Oh yeah, we must realize there is gross human rights violation in China, even the genocide of Uyghurs in Xinjiang. So with this regime hosting Olympics, I think we have every reason to boycott it. And I applaud U.S. government for its action to have a diplomatic boycott. But I also urge private sector to do something about it. They have to do something about it, including the athletes. I really want them to use this venue to express what they think they should express.
Professor, thank you. Doctor, thank you so much for calling in, and we'll talk to you again real soon. And we're going to have we have Gordon G. Chang. We're going to have him on our Sunday show, the Cats Roundtable. And we have a little bit tidbing about China right now that he wanted. Let's play that. We decided to interview Gordon G. Chang for our Sunday show, but I felt it was so important that we should play it on our Friday show for 2 or 3 minutes, and you'll hear the entire interview on Sunday on the Cats Roundtable. Tell us what's going on in the world.
This is an exceedingly dangerous period because you have not only on the border of Ukraine all of these Russian forces, you have China pressuring its neighbors, specifically Taiwan and India at this moment, but they could go after Japan and the Philippines. So we could see simultaneous crises. You know, there's always a lot of reasons why the world does tend to find stability, but right now anything can break. And if it does break, John, we could have global conflict.
Let's go start at the Russia-Ukraine area, where oil is at $90 a barrel, making Putin a ton of money, making the American people poorer because they're buying gasoline for double the price. They're paying 30% more for their food. My personal opinion is Putin is stirring the pot, making himself and Russia richer, and that the fact is Germany is never going to team up with the Ukraine. Turkey will never team up with the Ukraine. And those are two major corners for NATO. What say you?
I can understand Putin trying to make himself richer. What I can't understand, John, is the United States helping him. Under Trump, love him or hate him, we did achieve not only energy independence, but we were also the world's hydrocarbon superpower, both oil and gas. And we weren't dependent on the Middle East. We weren't dependent on Russia. But what we have seen in the Biden administration with this emphasis on climate change is the shutting down of drilling throughout the United States and now starting to beg Middle East producers. So we have put ourselves at a national security risk. So we are at a point where Putin not only laughing at the bank, but we have Biden helping to enrich him, and this is just wrong.
Wow. That was Gordon G. Chang, and he'll be on the full interview on Sunday, and he has a lot to say about it. And bottom line, between the professor and Gordon Chang, watch our asses. We're in combat. Mm-hmm. And that's all you could say. Now, Rita Cosby called me before, and she wants a breaking news story that she's going to do at 10 o'clock tonight. So right after the break, we're going to have Rita Cosby.
You're commuting home with Cats at Night. Now, here's John Katzimatidis on 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzimatidis Show. Cats at Night on the line with us right now is one of the best hosts on radio that there ever was, Rita Cosby, legendary Rita Cosby. She has a show Monday through Friday right here at WABC Radio at 10 p.m. until midnight, followed then by Dominic Carter, the Rita Cosby Show. Hi, Rita. What do you have in store for us tonight?
Oh, Lydia, thank you so much. You don't want to miss this tonight at 10 o'clock, everybody. We have a very powerful message about the Manhattan DA, and it comes from somebody who's working with another soft-on-crime DA. John Hatami works for George Gascon, who's just like Alvin Bragg in New York. And as we heard, of course, that passionate plea today from the widow of Jason Rivera, which I know you've been talking about, you and John, on the show, which was so moving, where she called out Alvin Bragg. Well, we have a really unique perspective from John Hatami. He is the deputy DA right under Gascon, and he has been working there for 16 years. He is in civil service. He's not a political guy, didn't come through Gascon. He hates Gascon, and he is one of the folks leading the effort to now get a recall, which just was approved yesterday. It's the second effort to try to get rid of these soft-on-crime DAs. And by the way, he has lots of ties to New York. His grandfather was actually with the NYPD. His wife's a cop. And he says the reason he is staying in the office there under Gascon is to make sure that some of the laws are implemented, fighting tooth and nail with Gascon's tried to get rid of him. He's tried to demoralize him. And he said, I am staying for the good of the people of America. And let's just hope that we have folks like that in New York doing the same thing.
And Rita, all these soft on crime DAs, what do they have in common?
Big bucks from George Soros, Lydia. And this is the other thing we're going to blow away tonight. The numbers are astounding. We've heard, you know, about $1 million going to Alvin Bragg. Tonight, you're going to find out just how much money is going across the country. It is unbelievable, much more than has ever been reported before from George Soros to these soft-on-crime DAs. And guess what? Most of the money is coming from people outside of the city. So people are sending money to people like Alvin Bragg. They don't even live in New York. So they don't deal with the repercussions that these soft-on-crime DAs that we are seeing every day. And it's going to blow you away from a guy who's actually working under one of them, can't stand him, and he said he is there to try to protect society. Great to have somebody like that, a good American, and we're going to hear from him tonight.
And Rita, you have one more story besides that I heard.
Yeah, we're also, by the way, going to talk with the rapper, to talk about the rapper, that 16-year-old rapper, the C. Blue case, of course. That is that crazy case that Lydia was talking about earlier. You did such a great job, you and Curtis, when you were talking about it earlier, Lydia. And also tonight, we're also going to be talking to reporter Jenny Tehr. She's the one who broke that big story that arrest warrants are going to count as IDs for illegal immigrants at airport security. It is stunning. Stunning. We're going to be talking to her. She broke the big story, and that's tonight
at 10
o'clock.
Say that again slowly. Arrest warrants will be counted as ID?
Yes. Isn't that amazing? We go to the airport, John. You know, you got to take off your shoes. You got to take off everything. But in this case, all they have to do is show, here's my arrest warrant, and that counts as
actual ID.
Can
they use that to vote, Rita?
Yeah, probably, right? Proof? No, they don't have to show any ID to vote, remember?
Oh, my God.
But remember, you got to show ID if you're 5 years old and you want to eat inside a Burger King.
Rita,
Rita,
we have to go because we got Dr. Peter Michalos. He's got some breaking news for us. Thank you, Rita. I'll be listening tonight on WABCRadio.com and 770 on the Holy Coast.
Thank you so
Rita
much.
Rita Cosby at 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock tonight. Thank you, Rita. And now we're going to Dr. Peter Michalos, who has some breaking news on what's going on with COVID. Doctor?
Well, the good news with COVID is that it looks like this new variant is not as bad, the subvariant of Omicron, known as the stealth Omicron variant. So that's a good news. And the hospitalizations appear, especially in the Northeast, to be going down. It looks like we're peaking. So that's a good thing. And hospitalizations are going down. Some of the other areas like Arkansas, Kansas, North Dakota, they're getting it now, but we seem to be on the downward trend, and it looks like the majority of the people who are being hospitalized are unvaccinated, and the majority of the deaths are unvaccinated. So vaccines don't stop you from getting Omicron or Delta or getting coronavirus, but what they do stop you is from getting hospitalized and dying. The other thing we want to talk about is everyone to be prepared for the snow and to be careful not to go out and shovel snow, because when we're shoveling snow in the cold, our blood pressure goes up, our coronary arteries tend to narrow, and that's why people get heart attacks and strokes sometimes shoveling, and we get dehydrated. So please, everyone, be careful and let the young people shovel the snow. If you have any high blood pressure or heart disease, it's not a good idea to snow. And get over to your nearest Christie supermarket and buy some water and your powered flashlights and make sure you have all your medicines. one of the tricks is if your power goes out, take two garbage bags and put all your food from the refrigerator and put it outside, hanging somewhere from a doorknob so it keeps it cool so you don't lose your food. If you have any medicines like insulin that have to be refrigerated, you can put them in a thermos with two ice cubes in a Ziploc baggie and a thermos, and that will protect any medicines or eye drops that need to be kept cool. And those are some of the safety tips. Check your tires, your tire pressures, because many times people forget about their tires and their tire treads, and it's very important if you absolutely have to go outside to protect yourself. And the other good news is that it looks like therapeutics are starting to show up in the pharmacies again, and we're getting more supplies of the IV monoclonal antibodies for COVID, and the supplies are increasing as manufacturing is catching up. So that's all positive news.
Well, what happened to the Theraflu type medicine?
Well, the Molnupiravir and the Paxlovid are coming out there, so they are becoming more available. It's just the manufacturing. There was such demand in the beginning that they just didn't have enough, but the companies are cranking them out, and they're being shipped out from New Jersey and Tennessee. So we are seeing more and more, and I think the governor is aware that they have to get therapeutics out there to people, and when they set up these testing centers, they need to have next door, they need to have infusion centers like they have in Florida. We need to have that in New York so that people can get treated right away and not end up being hospitalized. And I think we're also going to be seeing new vaccines that will cover multivariants, because the current vaccine only covers the original Alpha Wuhan variant, but it looks like they're going to have a Delta and Omicron variant in the next 2 to 3 months. Just like we update the flu vaccine every year for different variants, I think we're going to have to update vaccines. But the oral antivirals are the way to go, because they're the ones that block all types of coronaviruses, not just one variant.
Hey, Dr. Mikolos, I didn't want to interrupt you, but Vito Fisella just texted John this about the FDA has authorized the Insulet Omnipod 5, the world's first tubeless wearable system. This is it's the fourth artificial pancreas system on the market. What do you know about this?
Yeah, well, what happens is that basically you're going to have artificial pancreases that will sense the sugar levels and be able to put out insulin. But there's other work being done with epigenetics, where they're going to inject genes into the pancreas, and they're going to make the pancreas become younger and healthier. And they're going to do it on spinal cord injuries. And there's the work of David Sinclair at Harvard. And they're doing it, and they're regenerating retinas and optic nerves with the work of Nobel laureate Yamanaka in Japan. They're called the OSK gene. So that's going to actually end up being better than a lot of these artificial organs. But it is progress, just like we heard about genetically manufactured altered kidneys from pigs are going to be used for kidney transplants to deal with the shortage of kidneys. So we're seeing a lot of amazing things. That's why we have to support research and pharmaceutical companies, and we have to be careful when we talk about price controls, because if we don't have R&D research and development money,
Doctor,
we won't get new things.
We're out of time. Dr. Peter Mikolos, thank you for everything you do to keep people informed, and I want to thank in the studio Governor Patterson and Judge Weinberg, Lydia Serrano, and I understand our former police commissioner, Commissioner Shea.
Dermot Shea. Got a job at
Related. It's a fine company. You know what I like most about Dermot Shea and Related? Dermot Shea gets to stay in New York, and he's a fine person, and I'd like to be able to see him more often.
He really is.
Well, thank you, our listeners out there, and thank you, and have a great weekend, and God bless New York, and God bless America.